So I would say, like, if you go to the metaphor or analogy of saving money, being on a low carb diet is like saving money by living with your friend. You know, like, I could live with you now in Berlin, like, not pay rent, and I could save money for a year pretty effectively. But then after a year, like, come on, Charles, like, what are you doing? Please go get an apartment, you know? That, I would say that's it with most diets, because they're just not sustainable.
Welcome to the show. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the With the Right People podcast. We've got Charles Ruffieux as our guest today. I'm pretty excited. Charles has been on the podcast before, and there's a reason I brought him back today, because Charles is probably, when it comes to, I mean, we talked about mindset a lot, right, in the last episodes as well, just because I think that's a big part of what brought you the success that you have. You know, both in your personal life and your business, and obviously what we're going to talk about today, because your main business is actually helping people with their physique and their fitness, their body goals. And I mean, for the people who might have seen the other podcast episode, one of the first ones was we talked about your whole journey from anorexia, growing up with a club foot, and then becoming Switzerland's top personal trainer. And, you know, now that we are back together, we thought, you're in Berlin now, so we thought we'd just meet up, because we haven't really stepped into the real details of what you actually give people in advice, because I know that a lot of your clients have massive success, and, you know, they excel other, you know, different from other experience they might have had. So what I thought we would do today is we talk about two topics, and I'll split this in two episodes. So this first episode, which you're listening to right now, is going to be about weight loss and losing weight, and specifically the nutritional aspects of it. So, like, what do I eat? Like, how do I approach this whole thing? Do I have to get rid of all the things I like? All these kind of questions, and kind of your expert look on that. So I'm pretty excited about. And the second episode is going to be about gaining muscle, on the other hand, both experiences that you went through in your life successfully, and then also, I mean, helped numerous people of that. So I'm pretty excited, and we'll just start into the first one right away. Charles, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back for the third time.
Yeah, I'm glad, man. And I thought we just start right into it. You right now, the thing that you focus on is actually helping women with weight loss, mm-hmm. Which is pretty exciting, which is, you know, something pretty unique. And so I thought the first question would be, as we are going into this episode, is there any difference between men and women when it comes to weight loss? Like, what would you say to that? Or is there anything that to keep in mind for the listeners as we go through mm-hmm. this? Should we distinguish between the two?
Wow, that's a very good question, actually. I would say the basics are the same. Both need a calorie deficit. Both should eat sufficient protein. Both should work out. But I would say the process overall, especially if you're a woman or a guy, like the psychology, how you approach is a bit different. So for example, a guy, when he steps on a scale and he doesn't really lose weight right off the bat, like, we as guys are not that stressed about the scale or about the size of our clothes. Mm. Because if you're a woman, I cannot speak for all women, but the women I have in my coaching, most of them, they're very stressed by the scale and very stressed how their clothes fit. You know, like in German, like the Kleidergröße for most women is like this big word. So I would say how you approach it should be different between men and women, but the basics are the same. But the psychology is different. So as a woman, you need to not panic about the scale. And you should also know how to manage the stress of the scale, because it's the scale will stress you out more as a guy. But if you want, we can do it like this. We can first talk about the basics of nutrition and then psychology, because in my opinion, also, like, 90% of your success in life is mindset, I would say. Like Jim Rohn said, the mentor of Tony Robbins, and 10% is like the strategies you're using. I think he used 90 and 10, actually. Wow. Which in weight loss, I would say it's not 90 and 10, but it's still like probably 50-50, you know. So yeah, we can talk about both today if you want.
Wow. So as we go through this, probably, especially when we talk about mindset, maybe there might be some difference between men and women, and you'll point these out as we go. Mm-hmm. But just generally for everyone listening, you can kind of just sit back, listen, and it will apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe first off, what's the number one key to losing weight? Is there any? Like, what will we focus on the most?
Yeah, eating less and moving more, maybe. No, it's almost like a half joke. I mean, yeah, eating less and moving more, but calorie deficit is number one thing. But people really confuse these things. So, for example, people come to me, they're like, yeah, I'm in a calorie deficit, but I'm not losing weight. So by definition, if you're not in a calorie deficit, if you're not losing weight, you're not in a calorie deficit, right? So what does calorie deficit mean? Of course, over a longer period of time, eat less, consume less energy than your body expends. You know, but here's the first issue. I think if you want, I can talk about the basics and then talk about the mindset issue.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the statement. First, mindset issue is people start to track the calories and then they think, okay, every day I need to nail my calories perfectly. So for example, I have a client, let's call her Marta. And then Marta have eat 1,500 calories, you know, to lose weight. Then she would be like, oh, I need to eat 1,500 every day.
Mm.
And then one day she goes out with her friends, parties a bit, you know, goes home at 3 a.m. She ate 2,000 calories, 2,200. She's like, oh, wow, no, my day is over, my week is over, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, your body doesn't have a 24-hour clock where your body says, oh, now I ate too much, so I gained fat now. You know, it's like a longer process. So what I tell all my clients is, track your calories, but look at it on a weekly basis. So take the weekly average, you know, so all the 7 days, and then you divide them, and then you take an average, you know. It sounds a little bit complicated, but actually it's not. Like, you track a little bit, doesn't need to be 100% accurate. You're not a bodybuilder, should not like weight everything, but you track, you like try to do it as accurately as possible without decreasing your life quality too much, which I also teach my clients. And then you take the 7 days, divide them by seven, and you see, okay, one day with 2,000 calories doesn't really affect my weekly average that much. But people, especially then women, stress, and oh, I didn't do it perfectly, and then they next day they also like slack a little bit, and then one day of slack becomes 1 week, becomes 1 month, becomes 1 year, and then, you know, the whole year is over.
Right.
So calories are key, of course, but not on a daily basis, really. Like, look at it from a longer perspective, weekly or monthly. You know, and that's what most people go wrong, because they come from like a black and white mindset. I either do everything perfectly or I do everything wrong, you know, which is what most people do wrong in weight loss.
Yeah. And then I know that you also, you know, that's something different, for example, for people who come across weight loss. They think, oh, you know, I have to go through that terrible phase of my life where everything is just going to be not nice. And then after that, you know, I'm rewarded with the good physique. But you say it a bit differently, right? What's your take on this, on like diet and so on?
I like your questions, very good point. I teach my clients to lose weight without too many restrictions. So what I mean by that is, in the beginning, like, people come to me like, yeah, but calorie tracking, it's so much work, blah blah blah. And I'm like, hey, I agree with you 100%, like, calorie tracking is work. But you rather work for 6 months of your life with calorie tracking, and then you exactly know how to lose the weight, you exactly know how to maintain the weight, because you know calories are key. You have a better relationship with food because you know how many calories the food has. And then in 10 years from now, you don't need to be stressed because you gain 20 kilos. You know, you're rather a little bit stressed now on a daily basis instead of being stressed in like 20, 30 years from now when you are 30 kilos heavier. You know, because people want to lose weight without calorie tracking. I get it, man. Like, calorie tracking can be a little bit like of work in the beginning, but you can lose weight without calorie tracking, but then you don't know how to maintain this weight because you think, oh, I didn't eat ice cream for 2 months and I lost 10 kilos. Now I'm not able to eat ice cream anymore for the rest of my life. Like, what is going on, man? Like, calorie tracking is like spending money. It gives you flexibility, because if you track how much money you spend, for example, you know, okay, like, I spent this amount of money this month, I made this amount of money, like, I know how to manage it later on. So calorie tracking is the key in the beginning, but then if you track your calories for 3 to 6 months, you basically have the awareness to go without it later on. But you should do it. So I teach my clients how to track calories, and because they know the calories of their food, then they know, okay, today I can eat a pizza. Or tomorrow I'm planning an ice cream with my boyfriend. Or they can also be spontaneous. Today I feel like eating an ice cream. Let's check. Oh yeah, no problem. You know, tomorrow I can save some calories again on what, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Which makes the whole process like super enjoyable. Like, my girlfriend right now as well, she's losing weight again, like, she's losing weight because she wants to lose some kilos for like our travels in October. And she's eating ice cream almost every day with me, you know? And she's like, it's so enjoyable. Like, back in the days, I would have never eaten ice cream to lose weight, you know? And she loses weight. So, but she tracks the calories. So, you know, with calorie tracking comes a little bit of work in the beginning, but then in the end, like, it's way less work because you're like free.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Anything else that you kind of tell people to make this journey more easy? Maybe just being more easy on themselves, or like the practicality of everyday life. What helps make weight loss more easy?
Good point. The approach I would say is don't come from the mindset of I need to do everything perfectly from the start. You know, even if you say 1500 calories is too low, start with 1700, 1800. You know, start with the smallest common denominator. Just start to drink water for a month, or just do 10,000 steps for a month. Don't do like 1500 calories, 4 or 5 times a week workout. Like, it's not sustainable at all. Like on my German IG or German content, I always say, why should you do something if you cannot do it for the next 20, 30 years? You know, 5 times gym a week, low carb, blah, blah, blah. Like, come on, man. Like, who does low carb for like 10, 20 years? So why do you start it? Right? So look for the least common denominator. What are things you can already cut out without decreasing life quality? What things you want to keep in? And then you start weighing yourself and you see where the journey goes. Because in my opinion also, like, let's say you would need 6 months to lose your weight. Let's say you want to lose 20 kilos in 6 months. My opinion is like, hey, why not do it in a year? But do it like a little bit slower, with more self-love, self-compassion, eat some ice cream here and there, you know. Then, you know, you need half a year more, but who cares? Like, this year is going to pass by so quickly, you know. One thing I say, tell my clients is like, how fast did the last 12 months pass by? My last 12 months were like super quick.
Yeah.
Super quick. So I'm like, dude, I'm like, man, like, why not use the double amount of the time, but do it more sustainably, like enjoy it more, then you can keep that weight off.
That's a good point. You said the word low carb. So like, this is probably something that a lot of people might get into. There's thousands of diets and kind of different approaches, and like, some people say, oh, that's the only way. Do you agree with that? Is there any like thing you say, oh, that's actually the only way? Or is it what would you say to generally like the ratio of carbs, proteins, fats, and kind of go on all into that?
Yeah. You have great questions today. I like it, Crispin. Very good.
Sure, man.
I would say the basics are, you need to be in a calorie deficit, and all the diets work the same, low carb, keto. Even if you lose weight on a vegan diet, everything is with a calorie deficit. But how you get that calorie deficit is completely different. So I would say if you have a low carb diet and you want to have a calorie deficit, it works very effectively, because, you know, less carbs, less calories, blah blah. You probably eat less sugar anyway. You don't eat donuts anymore, ice cream, because there are no carbs. You're not allowed to eat carbs. But then the problem is, it's not sustainable, because at one point, like I mentioned, some women sometimes, like, they have a baby and they want to eat some bread with the baby, and then they need to expand their daughter, right? They're not allowed to eat bread in the morning. You know, like, come on, like, this is. So I would say, like, if you go to the metaphor or analogy of saving money, being on a low carb diet is like saving money by living with your friend. You know, like, I could live with you now in Berlin, like, not pay rent, and I could save money for a year pretty effectively. But then after a year, like, come on, Charles, like, what are you doing? Please go get an apartment, you know. That's it with most diets, because they're just not sustainable. So find something from the beginning that you can do for the next couple of years. Of course, as soon as you lost the weight, you can increase the calories, etc., etc. But from the start, find something you can do for at least a couple of years. Otherwise, how do you want to keep the weight off? Right? So I would say there's no one-by-one diet. Otherwise, everyone would do the diet. And I think a diet specifically is like already a red flag if something is a diet. You know, as soon as you have a diet, you exclude food groups. As soon as you exclude food groups, these food groups have more value, because it's like forbidden. You know, I have this with most of my clients. Like, they go to a coach older than me, and the coach says, don't eat chocolate. They're like, oh man, like, I wish I could get a chocolate. You know what I mean? Like, that's just decreases in value. So I would say, don't even follow a diet. You know, don't even follow a diet. And not to say diets are bad, diets work, but in my opinion, like, diets, like, there's always a new diet coming out every year. You know what I mean? Like, it's just mostly marketing, and people think, oh yeah, that's like the magic pill, but there's no magic pill in weight loss.
And when we go into, let's say we want to get into calorie deficit. I mean, we've got to, do you at all look at macros in that case? Or can you go into that? So like, people understand, maybe they don't have to go low carb, but then, you know, what would they at least kind of should look at when they go into calorie deficit?
Okay, so macro-wise, it depends on your goals. If you're a competitive bodybuilder, it really makes a difference about like the fat to carbs to protein, blah, blah. But if you're a general person, like also like me or you, I had bodybuilding goals back in the days, but looking back, like, I could have achieved it also with less stress. So what I would do is protein is number one. If you don't have enough protein, you will lose muscle mass during your diet. And number one goal during a diet, or I mean diet, is like a calorie deficit, let's say. Number one goal in a calorie deficit is to maintain your muscle mass and to lose body fat. So you train on one point, but then you also have enough protein. How much is enough protein? Most studies say 1.6 grams per kilogram of weight. Mm-hmm. I think it's 0.8 grams per pound of body weight. Mm-hmm. And there you should be safe, but also the research then conducted a study. They also say, or some other researchers say, yeah, okay, but we need to see, okay, sometimes people are just like different genetics, different protein metabolism, etc., etc. So long story short, like I would mostly add one standard deviation on top of this, which means 1 gram per pound of body weight is protein intake where you're like pretty safe. Mm. In grams, 2 grams per kg.
Okay. Or,
yeah, in this matrix. So this is the thing. Protein number one, 2 grams, 1.6 grams per kg, something like this. And then the rest of the macros, what I will also do is don't go too low fat, because fat you need for the hormones, for health, for your libido mostly. Some women can lose their menstrual cycle if they go too low fat.
Wow.
Especially women also, they have a better fat metabolism than men, which means to burn energy, they use fat more than glycogen and carbs. Mm. So women are better off to eat a little bit more fat. Most women will never really feel a difference, but the research shows that.
Mm.
So neither woman or man, I would say at least 0.5 grams of fat per kg,
mm-hmm.
which means if you weigh 80 kg, at least 40 grams during a diet. Like if you're a woman, a little bit more like 50, I would say.
Okay.
And then if you have this, the fat set and the protein set, it's a bit complicated. But what you do is you check how many grams of carbs do I still have left. Exactly, what's left. So then you eat what's left, and I always tell people, yeah, carbs, like, no need to have a specific carb goal. Just And also the thing is, if you have more cravings for example, me, I love dark chocolate.
Mm.
So I feel the best on a diet that is very high fat.
Mm.
I weigh 65 kilos now. I love a diet with 90, 80, 100 grams of fat. So I'm going to do that because I just my body feels the best, also mentally and stuff. Hormone, with the hormones and libido and everything. So there's some difference with people. So then you can experiment. But protein should be set. Fat should have a minimum. Then the rest is okay. And then vegetables and fibers, let's say 50, 20 grams of fibers per day, and you're good.
That's a good point. Yeah. I'm thinking what I was like, I have to ask something. I'm thinking if I can come up with that. Maybe in the meantime, what would you say is something else that people go wrong about when they go into weight loss?
Mm.
You come up with something else?
It's a good, very good point. I would say they want the results too quickly. I think Ty Lopez said this, but I forgot the how do you say this? Which part came first? Either people are... Maybe you know this actually.
Hmm.
Maybe people are impatiently patient. People are patiently impatient, I think, and they should be impatiently patient, if I'm not wrong. So people that are patiently impatient, they wait a long time to start, and then as soon as they start, they want to get results super quickly.
Hmm.
You know, you should be the opposite. You should be impatiently patient. So what you do is, maybe I got it wrong, but I think I got it right here. So what you do is, you want to start directly, like, oh, I want to lose weight, I want to start a business. You start directly, but as soon as you start, you give yourself a lot of time to figure it out.
Yeah,
you know, I would say weight loss the same. As soon as you start, you should start very quickly. And then, like, almost like a pit bull, like, bite it and don't let it go till you have it. You know, like, don't let it go. Just figure it out, and then you get it. Even if it takes years. My business journey was exactly this. I figured out I want to have my own business, like, 7, 8 years ago. And I just, like, took 7, 8 years to take off. You know what I mean? Like, it takes time. But as soon as you have the idea, like, success loves speed, like, just start, you know. Mm. Just do something. Like I said, I think in the beginning of the podcast, just start to drink water. Just eat more vegetables or protein, whatever. Don't even track calories if you don't want to.
Mm.
But start directly. And as soon as you start directly, like, just keep at it every day. You do your best. No perfectionism. Yesterday was a party where we were at. Like, shout out to Giancarlo in case he's listening. His birthday party. I was also home at 3:30 a.m. Like, my diet was not the best. But I'm like, okay. When I was at the hotel, I bought a protein bar at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Let's go, you know. This morning also bought 2 protein bars, ate nothing else, but that's it. It's the best I can do. But you just do the best.
Mm.
And these days will add up after a year. Like my old business mentor, Mario Tomic, said something very good once to me. He was like, it doesn't matter what you do on your worst or best days, you know, because these days will just be maybe 10% of your year.
True.
Like 30 days, 70 days max. 80% of your days are average days. So it matters what you do on the average days that are not perfect. You know, mm-hmm. how you act then. That's the most important thing. So if you're a perfectionistic person, all these 80% days, you're like, oh, it was not perfect, I feel shitty, and then you will stop anyway because you feel shitty every day. So, but you know what I mean? So on the average day, you'd be like, okay, it was an average day, it was not too bad, let's have an average day later. So just focus on having like average days the whole year, and then you have your goal.
That's interesting because there's like, I feel like I used to think there was only two ways about this, but this is actually the third way to think about it. So like, you know how, maybe some people relate, you know how you watch anything on the internet pretty much, which is motivational, it will say, it's not about your good days, it's about the bad days, and you should be, you know, great at the bad days. Or like, you know, the people who, you know, they are referring to are the people who only focus on the good days. And I feel like both are kind of like I don't know if that's the right mindset, mm-hmm. but like the thing you said, you know, even if you're great at the bad days, you know, the bad day is only going to be 10% anyways.
Probably.
So like, it's probably better and easier on yourself to just focus on the average days. And then you have some good days, which are great, and they will average out the bad days. You don't have to be great at the bad days.
Exactly.
You know, I would guess now, as you told me, and that makes much more sense to me than like, you know, pushing on like the worst day possible to get an average result. More like, you know, take the average days and do great results or good results there.
Good point. Also, it's the opposite of black and white thinking. It's called cognitive flexibility. I need to give props to Mario Tomic because he told me this and didn't come up with this. But it's cognitive flexibility, actually.
I like it. Yeah. I actually came up with the question in the meantime that I wanted to ask.
Okay.
So maybe that's controversial. I don't know. Some people, and I mean, you know, I have no idea if that's true, if it's that possible, what's like the research on this. You know, some people say, hey, you can gain muscle while you lose weight. Some people say, oh, no, it's not possible if you're in a calorie deficit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people say, oh, you're going to lose muscle anyways. Or, you know, what's kind of the truth in that? Is there any truth?
I love these questions, man. They're great. It's definitely possible, but it depends on the person. It depends also how long your training age is, which means also how far away are you from your genetic potential. You know, if you are like a bodybuilder that maxed out, like you're, I don't know, 5'10" and you weigh 180 or 200 pounds, 15% body fat natural, you're like very, very big already. So a guy that then wants to like build muscle and lose fat is just not possible at this like training age, you know. But if you're a big beginner like you, or your flatmate Tim as well, like if you're a beginner with like weightlifting, like, you know, you can lose fat and build muscle because your body's just, the weight training is such a big stimuli, like your body just needs to adapt with muscle building. There's no other way around it. And then at the same time, if you're in a little bit of a calorie deficit, you can lose fat during that time. A lot of women I have in my coaching also, it happens to a lot of them because women actually have around 9 to 10% body fat more than a guy. You know, average woman has probably 25% body fat, the guy maybe 15, 16, something like this. Maybe slightly more, but anyway. So because they have so much body fat, it's easier for them to lose fat and build muscle at the same time. So it's possible, but of course you need the right training, the right approach, and it's not really the norm, but it is possible. And then also something I want to add here is, even like thinking it's not possible is also the wrong mindset. You know, thinking that with me it's not even possible. Like, even if it's not possible with you, you should have the complete opposite mindset. You should go to the gym with the mindset like, I will build muscle and lose fat at the same time. You may maybe not build muscle if you have shitty genetics or shitty diet, whatever, but you will at least maintain it. You know, you will get better results anyway. So why go?
Well.
Yeah, why go with a defeated mindset to the gym or to your weight loss journey as soon as you start, right?
So maybe that's more a point for guys now. You know, say, you know, I would be overweight, and I'm like, hey, you know, if I just lose weight now, I'm just gonna be skinny. Would you recommend kind of focusing on trying to do those two together? Would you recommend, hey, let's go on like shredding down the weight and then focus on muscle building? Would you go like, I mean, we'll talk about gaining muscle in like the second part of this episode, which will come out after this one right away. But just to give some insight in that already.
So you mean as soon as you start out as a beginner, how to do it?
So like, say I'm supposing that's more a question towards like, you don't know, like asked by men. More frequently, say I would be overweight and I would want to lose fat, but then, you know, I would think, you know, if I just lose fat, I'm going to be skinny and then I have to build muscle. Would you approach this from like losing weight first and then focusing on muscle building, or would you try to combine that? Is that too much? Is that, you know, what would be your advice for that person?
Yeah, that's also a very good question, like the other ones, because it's individual also. I would say the main reason, it depends how much body fat you start with, and it also depends how much this body fat is bothering you.
Mm.
You know, if you have a lot of body fat but like zero muscle, then I would ask, okay, what's bothering you more, being skinny or being like more on the fatter side?
Mm.
You know, I have a bias on being shredded first and then building muscle. Why? Because when you have low body fat, it's easier to build muscle without gaining too much fat because you have a better hormonal like start, you know, like long story short, like insulin sensitivity, etc., etc. But it depends who starts at what place. I have one of my female clients. She, for example, it's a good example. She's 169 tall, so 5'7". She started at 59 kilos, so 135 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And she was already like on the skinnier side, but with her I also saw she had a little bit more higher body fat percentage, also like on the hips and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So with her, I put her on a calorie deficit, but also on a weightlifting program at the same time. And she actually started to lose fat and build a little bit of muscle mass, because I was like, okay, she already started with a little bit. I mean, she doesn't sound fat at all, but her goal was to have like a six pack almost.
Okay.
So it depends on the goals, how much body fat you start with. It's very individual. And also what bothers you the more. As a person, as a
That's a good question to ask.
Yeah.
And then something else that just came up. Another controversial thing I wanted to ask. This is also something, you know, probably both men and women think about. You know, everyone has their own place where their body just stores fat, you know, so to say. Like, some people have it more, like, on the hips. Some people have it more, you know, right, I don't know, like, on the arms or whatnot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably it's individual differences. Is it smart to think about this, or is it just, hey, you're going to lose weight and your body naturally does it the way it does it, or can you manipulate that in any way?
Yeah, exactly. It's genetic. The body will do it how it does it, yeah. It's mostly, I think hormones play a big role in this.
Mm-hmm.
Most women have it around the hips, the legs. Most guys are on the belly because of the different hormones. So just lose weight, see where you land, basically.
Mm.
But what I would add also, that is very interesting but more advanced, is I realized with competitive bodybuilders that lose weight, they're at 6% body fat, and then they regain the weight very quickly. They store more fat on the belly after this, even more than before. So their physique, let's say at 80 kilos after the competition, it looks different than the physique 80 kilos before the competition.
Mm-hmm.
You also see it with women that have binge eating disorders, and they gain weight, they automatically gain more weight on the hips. And I would say on the belly. Why? Because of the hormone cortisol. Cortisol helps the body to store more fat on the belly, which I didn't know before, and I saw it with some of my clients, or one client specifically. And with, some girl that came to me after a binge eating disorder or during, and also with competitive bodybuilders. So then it changes a little bit, but other than that, you cannot really affect it where you
So measure. Just don't worry about it. Well, you know, it will turn out in a good way if you just, you know, focus on the basics. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then regarding foods, because we're also talking, you know, I mean, the whole thing probably is, you know, a lot about nutrition. So one thing we might want to add, just practically, any foods you would recommend or any foods you would not recommend? I mean, that's a question a lot of people ask.
I know a lot of people have very strong beliefs about nutrition, like these foods increase inflammation, these foods are not good. A lot of vegans will say like meat is the devil and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm biased. I know my own bias because I had an eating disorder when I was 14,
mm-hmm.
anorexia. I had a second eating disorder when I was 23, orthorexia, which means the obsession of eating very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had both eating disorders already.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I'm like, me as a person, I focused on not giving too many food rules because this is what gave me an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And some people listening to a podcast, especially women that are very perfectionistic, that's also people in general, that perfectionistic, have low self-esteem, they are more prone to getting eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So for these people, I'm very cautious to say, okay, these foods I don't eat, that these foods I eat.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a lot of guys listening to this will say, oh, this guy has no idea, like this meat is bad and eggs are bad and this and that and this and that, but for me it sounds harsh, but I rather even eat unhealthy food and maybe decrease my lifespan by 5 years instead of living the next 70 years in a state of like constant like neuroticism about food and eating disorder. So also like think about this when you talk about nutrition, because a lot of people just focus on like the bare foods, but they don't focus how these foods affect them. You know, so just as a little disclaimer, because I realized I have that bias. Once I was in a group call with my friend Florian, shout out, and we were talking about nutrition, and he had other opinions than me. And then I realized why I have these strong opinions about like food rules, because I had an eating disorder before. So that's my bias. So I don't have really foods I never eat. I eat all kinds of foods, but something I eat rarely is fried food. Because when you fry food, like the fatty acids, they get oxidized and they can harm your body.
Trans fats, right?
Yeah, exactly. To get trans fats, harm your body, cancer risk, etc. So these things I really don't eat that much because I also don't find them tasty. It's like too fatty for me and stuff.
So like this would be more like chips, fries, and so on. But if you like fry something in the pan with oil that's heat resistant, that would be something different.
Yeah, right? if it's saturated fat like coconut oil or butter, it's
that
better.
Works. That's
and
okay.
Olive oil sometimes can also work, but I think around 180 Celsius also olive oil gets a bit like broken down.
Yeah,
but you don't die if you eat a little bit of like olive oil that is like heated.
But yeah, like people who like just cook at home and they use oil that works, for example, coconut oil, then that would be fine. But it's more like regarding food that's like deep fried with. Mm-hmm. Oil that breaks down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And fast food.
But you asked me about good foods to like lose weight, right? No.
Yeah, this one is for losing weight, yeah.
So one thing you can check out is the satiety index of food. Mm-hmm. You can Google that stuff as well. They made a study with how much foods satiate you. Mm-hmm. And the food that was at the level of 100, they used like a specific metric, and the 100 was the potatoes. Mm-hmm. And then they checked, okay, which foods satiate more than potatoes and which less. So basically, the end of the story is high protein foods and high fibrous foods satiate the most. So if you focus on high protein foods, like in the study, they used cottage cheese, eggs, meats, fish, also like chickpeas. What I can recommend my clients actually is chickpea pasta. Pasta is made out of chickpeas and lentils. It's a lot of protein. Can easily substitute with normal pasta, or all the way around, you can substitute normal pasta with this pasta, and then you will be very satiated. Then even sometimes, if you don't want to, you don't even need to track calories because your whole diet is made around these foods, right? Mm. Like protein-rich foods, fibrous foods. Then what I also check is how much time you need to cook it, because I'm a very lazy person. Most people don't want to cook that much. So for example, a food like cherry tomatoes, I like a lot because you don't even need to cook it, and it's like a snack. Mm. Cherry tomatoes for me is very high on my list because it's of course easy to buy, obviously, like don't need to cook it, just wash it, rinse it, and that's it. Cottage cheese is also very high on the list because you don't need to cook it, like eat it quickly, pa-pa-pam, done, you know. And then other like standard vegetables, like my whole diet is very easy, like cherry tomatoes, berries also, I can just buy and wash them. When I cook, or when my girlfriend also cooks, or we cook together, whatever. We don't do that often, like she will laugh now listening to this, but you know, when I cook or she cooks, like we use a lot of like vegetables that are frozen, because you just put them in the microwave or you just like heat them up and that's it. Meat, like I don't even want to go get into like too many details, but just food that go like quickly. You know, also if you're a vegan or vegetarian, like chickpeas, whatever, chickpea pasta, porridge, and then all people will say, oats are bad and stuff, blah blah, but in my mind I'm just like, like if oats would be so bad, man, why would there be like so many vegans eating oats and having no issues?
I was gonna say, I'm not in that bubble, so I've never even heard that oats would be bad, to be honest.
There is a bubble, man. It's a bubble for sure. I know some guys. I said at a party, I also think there were guys that would have told me
only oats
are bad. No, they'd say oats are bad.
Like, but yeah, they only say that about oats, or is it like a specific category, or only oats?
For example, people that are on a carnivore diet, they argue that these plant foods have, how do you call it again? Like have these plant poisons, because plants produce poison, so we don't eat them. Right. I forgot the name. I would need to like check. No. I knew it. So I knew that stuff before. But that's true. But these plant poison will not affect your body and harm it to such a degree. But it's true though. That's the thing. In my opinion, is everyone has a point. Carnivore people have a point. Vegan people, like people on a vegan diet, have a point.
Yeah.
But they, in my opinion, they over exaggerate the points. For example, vegan diet, plants are the best. We should eat plants. Like all the studies say the same. Okay, cool. But all these studies, like the China study, all these studies, okay, cool. They prove stuff. But also, these people were not complete vegans. You know, maybe the Chinese people also had other habits.
True.
You know, because I eat 80% plants, but also some meat and fish. So vegans would say, yeah, bro, like fish, mercury, and all these things. But it's the same if you check the studies, it depends what fish you eat, you know, how much mercury the fish has, and your body can also like filter out the mercury from your system. Carnivore people say plants are bad because of these, I think, oxalates also, and I don't even know how. I will check it later. And that's true, like if you eat a lot of plants, a lot of plant protein, these plants will inhibit your stomach acid to a certain degree, your stomach enzymes that will help you to break down the protein will be harmed by these plant compounds, whatever, mm-hmm. but not to an extent where you cannot get all the protein from your vegan diet. It's just not true. But to say that on a vegan diet you can eat the same amount of protein than a normal diet and have the same results, in my opinion, is wrong. Mm-hmm. The same as people saying a carnivore diet is the only way to go, and you know, meat is like the holy grail. I mean, I don't think it's also the truth. Mm. I just think people are natural black and white thinkers, and the more extreme the better.
Mm.
But if I check my whole friend circle, there's not a single guy, a single girl okay, I know a guy that is vegan for 7 years, shout out to my best friend Florian, but he does it in a sustainable way. But all the people, like, I don't know anyone that's like carnivore or low carb or keto for like years on end. You know, if you're a vegan for moral reasons, like my friend Florian, other people, cool, do it. Yeah. You know, but then also I don't know people that are carnivore or keto for like 20-30 years, man. Like very, very few people are. You know, and in my opinion also, if there would be a perfect diet out there, that it would be so clear that almost like everyone half of the population would be this or that, you know. But it's in my opinion not the case.
So it's probably also not the thing to worry about. Like, it's probably like 5% of the equation. Like, kind of like, what exactly kind of foods are you? As we talked about the other things, and also like the mindset you said, you know, instead of just, you know, getting into like your mind, you walk around every day expending 80% of your energy on like thinking about what foods to eat,
yeah.
You know, then, you know, just not going to be happy or productive either.
One point I want to add here, because I have a bias against eating disorders.
Mm.
People say, oh yeah, dairy products are bad, or casein increases cancer risk, which is also not true. But you know, anyway, like a lot of like things that people throw around about diet. First of all, if you would want to be like 100% healthy, the only thing you could probably eat is like just drink water. And then, because there was always someone saying, yeah, this is bad, that is bad. But the thing is this, also if you talk about cancer risk, of course something will increase your cancer risk, but a lot of things also decrease your cancer risk. For example, people that want to eat all healthy, like they should also focus on the sleep. Low sleep quality will increase your cancer risk by more than one or twofold. You know, which people don't, like people want to eat healthy, want to eat like just carnivore diet, but they don't use blue light blocker glasses. Or, you know, they use a lot of coffee, they have a lot of cortisol in their system, or also good relationships help you with health. And they don't really focus on these things. Or they like smoke still, or they still, alcohol is a big thing. Like, I know a lot of guys that are on a carnivore diet, but they still go party and drink alcohol. I'm like, dude, man, like, your priorities are not in the right place. So, you know, at the end of the day, you need to make your own decisions. For example, I still drink Coke Zero, Pepsi Max during the summer on a daily basis, but I don't drink alcohol at all. You know, but you need to pick your own poison at the end of the day. You know, like, don't be too much of an orthorexic, because I had orthorexia, and orthorexia is a serious disease where you just focus on doing everything like perfectly healthy and stuff. And now I'm not orthorexic anymore, and I feel so much better, man.
Like, I can imagine. Cool. I mean, I would say like, I can relate to that in terms of trying to get everything perfect, right? And it's probably not the way to go. So I'm pretty sure it's not the way to go. I think that's, you know, my goal was to give people the chance to, you know, maybe they are just getting into this, or they are into this, but kind of want this recap and want to have really quick and fast and, you know, understandable. So I think, I mean, that's been like the whole conversation to this point, and like especially kind of last point, has been a great summary of, hey, you should kind of think about the priorities you're setting for yourself when it comes to this. Focus on the basics. You know, also be good to yourself. And yeah, as I told you in the beginning, before I end, I wanted to ask you like a more unusual question that you can answer in any sort of way you would like.
The rant is coming.
Would you have one life hack you would like to share? That's something I wanted to implement in the podcast. I feel like, you know, sometimes you ask people just about something that they experienced that they've, you know, learned to do differently now. That's just like a really small tweak. This can be, you know, regarding weight loss, health, anything, but it can also be just anything in life. Anything you have in mind?
Yeah, of course. Like, some people that know me personally will laugh, but I love to talk about weight loss. But in my opinion, it's just like a little sphere of your life, of everything. I would even go a bit further, like personal development wise, something that really changed my life the most. And right now I'm reading again the book by, you know, Robert Cialdini, Influence.
Yeah.
And something I always did intuitively, because I love people, like I love to give people value, I love to help people out. And I realized, like, if you are the person that does people favors if they want favors from you, or you always help people out. Or when I meet new people, I think to myself, okay, how can I help this person? Do I know someone who could help this person? Vice versa. And you connect these people, you help them, even if it's just a little favor. For example, one of my friends or a guy I know online, like he needed like $500 to get into some program. And I had no idea if I get my $500 back. I'm just like, okay, man, you can just lend them. He was like, I will pay you back. And then a couple of days later, he texts me, hey man, like you're the only one of people I asked that gave me the money without asking questions. And thank you for that. Like, I really appreciate that. And now since then, a couple of days later, he went viral on TikTok with a video about weight loss. Mm. But he's not the coach for women, he's a coach for men. Mm. And now every time he gets a female client, he just sends me like the people. Yeah. Because he's like, man, this guy just gave me $500, I will pay him back, but he just gave me the value.
Yeah.
You know, and if you had a person that always does this, sometimes people don't return favors, sometimes maybe something happens, but if you do that for like 10 years straight, which I almost did since I'm like 18, 19, boy, there's so many people that will come back to you when you need something, or it just creates like this huge, huge network of people that just want. I told you, I was like, hey, Chris, you want to record a podcast? Yeah, sure. You know? Yeah, sure. It's all the people as well. Giancarlo invited me to the boat yesterday, you know, and stuff like this. And when my mother passed away, he helped me out. Giancarlo is the perfect example for this. Shout out. So I think if you're that person that just does this like altruistically, it will come back. And coming back to the book I mentioned before, Robert Cialdini talks it, the reciprocity bias. So human beings are almost socially programmed to return favors, even if it's years later. So if you're that person that gives people, like helps people out for years straight, it will come back like a wave years later, and you cannot imagine how your life could change. Because if you help people to get what they want, they will also help you to get what you want.
That's a great message, man.
I thought about it a couple of days ago. It's like so true.
And I think that's how I know you, pretty much.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That's one of the main characteristics I associate with you. So, man,
yeah,
that's been insanely valuable. Where can people find you?
Yeah, igcoach.charles.official. Unfortunately, I just do German content, but of course, I'm also fluent in English, as you can hear. Or I hope almost fluent. but obviously, if you have questions about in English, or I also take English clients. I have one English one-on-one client. I take three of them at a time. But yeah, it's German content, but you can always contact me over social media. Coach Charles on YouTube. And I think that's it. You will post the links.
Yeah, I'll post it in the show notes as well. Man, and now I'm pretty excited. We kind of say goodbye, but at the same time, we'll jump right into the next episode, actually, which is going to be about gaining muscle. So, like, kind of the opposite, not the opposite. We're not black and white, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, the other part to the equation where, you know, a lot of people identify with and say, hey, man, that's one of my goals. So that's what we're going to talk about in the episode that you can click on just right after this one. So we say a quick goodbye, and if you're interested in that, just check out the other episode, and we'll see you there.